Let's spill the beans, chew the fat. Food for thought and jokes on tap. Talking with our mouths full, having fun. A piece of cake and humble pie. Serving up a slice of life. Leave the dressing on the side. It's Naked Lunch. Clothing optional.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving, David.
Thanksgiving, turkey.
That was my turkey. How was it?
Very good. It's very white. Very white meat.
Nobody's ever said I'm anything other than white meat. But I have Thanksgiving memories. My parents, you know, I think you know this, that my folks weren't great in the kitchen.
I picked up on that, yes.
So we would go, like, my mom's friend, Hilda, she was very good. And we always had great meals over there. But one year, Hilda decided to go healthy. And instead of turkey, she made fish. And this was such a scandal in our family. Like, my mother was into it. But Max and the children, we were like, what the hell has happened? This is a complete bastardization of the holiday. And it stayed with me to the point where, if I think you Raymond fans know already, this was our first Thanksgiving episode that we ever did, was Deborah was going to make fish.
So you made it pay off eventually.
Not only did we make it pay off, but we thought of a way that Raymond could ruin it. And he inadvertently puts the fish in the dishwasher. Because he's not paying attention. And, you know, my folks really had terrific material my whole life growing up that I mined for Raymond and beyond. They were not only wonderful parents, they were brilliant comedic geniuses without ever knowing it. Do you have your own memories of Thanksgiving and your folks?
I have good, bad, and ugly memories of Thanksgiving. It is my favorite holiday.
Yes.
It is my favorite food, but
the turkey dinner.
The turkey dinner.
Not the fish dinner.
No, definitely not fish sticks for not that at all. But my childhood memories are initially great. And then when my parents split up, there were pretty rough few years in different ways. There may have been a Thanksgiving in some sort of institution. I won't go into too many details. Not a place where you feel very thankful. But my overwhelming childhood divorced child of Thanksgiving memory is learning that when you have parents who insist you have Thanksgiving with both of them, you know, there's a lot of, like, there was, I think lawyers may have been involved in setting up those Thanksgivings. I learned the hard way that you only can have stuffing at one of your Thanksgivings. You can probably get by on a little bit more white meat, but
Were these Thanksgivings the same day? Did they both expect you to show up at?
Oh, 100%.
So it wasn't like one night one and one night the other.
No, this was.
So you would have one and then go eat another.
One early, one late show.
This could have led to a host of issues.
Well, it has, literally. that's my Hebrew name, is Host of Issues.
Welcome to Host of Issues. I'm your host.
I'm the co-host of Issues. Absolutely a lot of craziness that way. It's why I didn't go to my college graduation, because I was told I had to have like a dinner with both. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to go to my graduation.
But I love Thanksgiving. I love any holiday that focuses around a central meal, as I think you know. But you know, people now have Friendsgivings, which wasn't a thing when I think we were growing up, right?
No.
Do you think Friends started it?
Yes, the TV show?
Yes.
I don't know that.
But I know that my daughter's going to several Friendsgivings dinners. It's just an excuse to get together. But it also says something larger, I think, which is family is who you make
100%.
Who you make it with, right? Your friends can be the people you work with. This is all, we're all family.
In fact, that leads us to the fact that even within our first year, I believe Naked Lunch also gathered around a meal, centered on a meal.
Yes.
We've become a kind of
it's
dysfunctional
family. It's
like every
show is Thanksgiving, David.
Exactly. And we're the turkey.
Yes, definitely. We've made friends. New friends. I mean, a lot of the people that you're hearing on the podcast are our old friends that we've been, you know, are some of them for 25, 30 years. But we have new friends too. We wanted to play some of the highlights of our new friends, and we think it's appropriate because their movie focuses a little bit around food.
And family.
And everything bagel. And family, definitely. But what a, I feel so lucky this year to have had the podcast with you, David, but also to have made new friends like Michelle Yeoh and Ke Kwan from the sure-to-be Oscar-nominated movie Everything Everywhere All at Once. So let's listen to some of our highlights from that episode. I think you'll love them as we do. If you've seen the movie, you know that an Everything Bagel features prominently. And so today's Naked Lunch is Courage Bagels, which the New York Times, I don't know if you know this, the New York Times, New York Times said the best bagels in America are now in California. Sorry, New York. It says it in the... Yes.
Wow.
And we have the best picture and the best bagels all in podcast. Yeah.
And the best people.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? You've been eating now for a few minutes. Do you like it?
Phil, this is amazing. You have very good taste.
In French. You guys.
Oh.
Mm. I agree. It's amazing. This is the best bagel I've had.
Is that right?
It's the best bagel.
I've had New Yorkers who can be a little snobby sometimes about, for good reason, about the food, and they've said the same thing. David, you saw the movie.
Not only did I love the movie, but I thought this movie is going to make people fall back in love after this last couple crazy years with going to the movies. Mm-hmm. It's a dazzling movie.
You know, we never expected this reception from the audience. It was just a little movie that we shot in Simi Valley, California, before the pandemic. In fact, we shot 99% of the movie up until March 14th with one day left to go, and then we were shut down. We were actually the last production in the entire country that kept going until we couldn't go any further. They said, you have to stop because everybody stopped filming with one day left. And then we regroup 8 months later.
To get the one day?
To get that one day. And then, they added a second day.
Yeah.
So, and it was really interesting too, because I shot my scene in Los Angeles and my scene was with Michelle, mm-hmm. where we were in the van. And she shot her. I shot it with Michelle Standen, mm-hmm. And then Michelle shot her scene in Paris with my Standen.
Wow! No, I didn't know that.
Sorry. Oh, with no one. Okay. and then the magic.
No
of,
one can stand in for you.
Yeah. Exactly. Why would I and want then, anybody else? Yeah, exactly. Right?
And then actually they play because they shot my scene first. And then I guess they were like, it was on an iPad. They show.
Yeah, it was iPhone, iPad, anything that was. Could have sound and all that. Since they already shot you, they just played it back. But what you were saying, you know, we've spent the last over two years, not being able to go to the cinema. And when we first had this movie out in South by Southwest and we had the premiere there, you could feel the energy of the audience. And we remembered why we make movies. It's for the magic of sharing, for the magic of being in the cinema. You know, our ancestors told stories under the starlights, right? And that is how we continue our culture and continue our storytelling. And with this movie, it transcends the race. It transcends anything. It's so relatable, whether you're a child, whether you're older. And it's a very, very powerful voice because the core of the story is about love and family and never giving up on each other.
That feeling increases on multiple viewings.
Yes.
Because I got way more emotional the second time.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting next to my wife at the time, too.
Maybe that's another reason why.
But by the end of the movie, we're holding hands and crying.
Oh.
So thanks for that. Because she usually doesn't like me very much.
She's here and she's confirming. She's nodding in agreement.
But I get a little emotional even thinking about it. But also that we've become friends is like such a gift to me. I never would meet you.
We would not have met you. We were big fans of yours.
That's very sweet. But isn't that the best thing about traveling?
Mm-hmm.
This is a form of travel.
Yes.
Going to a movie that maybe you'd think as a white Jewish man in Los Angeles, this Asian, it's like a crazy looking movie. It's about an Asian, as you're saying, it's very specific.
Mm-hmm.
But what I learned being a writer is that the more specific you get, the more universal it becomes. So there are things that are so specific in your movie, like there's a world, it shows multiple universes, there's a world that exists where you have hot dogs for fingers. Okay, now that's a choice.
Yeah.
Right?
A bold choice.
A very specific choice.
A very bold.
It's not just a world where you look a little different. What if there's a universe where you could exist, but everyone has hot dogs for fingers?
Mm-hmm.
That's the brilliance of the Daniels. How do you meet them? How does that script come to you? How does it read? When you first read it, you think, well, these guys are obviously insane. Right?
They are.
But you, a part of you has to say, I'm a little insane too. I want to do it.
I think that's exactly. Because when I received the script, I always say to my agents, I want to work with young directors. I want to work because I think in that way, they will see something very different in you. And they will present you with something that you can't even imagine possible. So when I received the script, and my agents did say to me, well, you know, they've only done one other feature. So they're not like terribly well known. They're very well respected, especially in certain festivals, because they're independent filmmakers. And in my mind, that's not the point. You know, we've done Marvel movies, we've done the bigger movies, but sometimes it's the little gems that really has the bigger heart, bigger, strong beating heart. When I read the script, the first thing that came to mind is like, either they're certifiably insane or I am in for a ride of my life.
Or both.
Or both, yes. Yeah, I will do it and then all of us will be locked up away for good.
But what a lesson to embrace that.
I think it takes, you know, I think like for Key to come back out after 20 years, that takes courage.
Another great story. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. Life is about taking risks.
Yeah.
Right? If you can't just be in your comfort zone the whole time. And this movie was a risk.
Yeah.
But I felt that it also was so many things that I hadn't done in my career,
mm-hmm.
that I wasn't really given the opportunity to be a more comedic person or in the story, like Crazy Rich Asians. Everybody is going crazy and having a wonderful time, and I play the most serious character. And here I would be able to explore
everything. Literally everything.
Literally everything, and have my mind blown away. So I met with the Daniels. And I think on that is the choice. Like you say, it's about a choice. If these boys did not speak with passion, did not speak that this is coming from love and they put everything into this everything bagel, then I would not choose to be with them because they would be wasting my time. But the way they described their story, why they wanted to do it, was really from deep from their souls. But the first thing I said to them was, she cannot be called Michelle Wong in the film.
You didn't want your name.
No. They said, but we wrote this story for you. You know, it's so great because at the end of the day, you'll go to the movie world and then, you know, you'll be like, Michelle Wong. I'm like, that's Michelle Wong. You just said it. It's Wong, not Michelle Yeoh. And this woman, very ordinary, aging, Asian woman, deserves her voice. Because she's the woman that you will walk past without a second glance.
Yeah.
She's the mother, the grandmother, the auntie who is, you know, working so hard to keep her family together, you know, to make sure that her family lives well and all that. They deserve that voice. So, and if you call her Michelle like he did, one time in the movie, then you distract the audience from Evelyn.
Exactly.
Right? Because every time you say Michelle, they'll be thinking, is that Michelle Yeoh they're talking about or Michelle this they're talking about?
So very smart.
Once the Daniels heard me, they're like, okay, we're changing the name. We're changing the name. And they did.
When I was a child, I was really lucky to be in, you know, that Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and also Goonies. So I thought I would have this amazing career as an actor. And the irony was, I didn't go looking for acting. Acting found me. And as I got older and I fell in love with acting, and when I wanted to do it for the rest of my life,
yeah,
it wasn't there for me. You know,
right after Goonies, you couldn't, there weren't any other parts?
I did it was just the opportunities came far and few in between. And right. It was just so hard to be an Asian actor at that time.
And so you're getting like roles that are stereotypical and bad.
Oh, yes, yes. And in fact, back then, if you were to stack up 100 scripts
yeah.
and go through every single one of them,
yeah.
there was a high probability that none of them would feature any meaningful Asian characters.
Yep.
That was the reality back then. It was just hard to be an Asian actor. And especially when, you know, I was in my early 20s. And for anybody in the early 20s, it's supposed to be the golden years. And all I did was wait and wait for that phone call to ring. Not for an offer, but for an opportunity to audition.
Yep.
When it did come, it was for a character with no names and three lines. And I walk into the casting director's office, and there were 30 other Asian actors waiting to audition for this tiny, tiny role.
Yeah.
And for, you know, for the longest time, it wasn't fun anymore.
Right.
And that's why I decided to step away. And then, you know, I was content working behind the camera the entire time until 2018 when Michelle Yeoh's Crazy Rich Asians movie came out.
Yeah.
And I had serious FOMO. I wanted, you know, I remember watching it three times in the movie theaters. And I cried every single time. And I cried because it was emotional. It was a great movie. But I also cried because I wanted to be up there on the screen with all of them. And that was really then when I decided to go, you know, do I want to act again? And I thought about it for a long time. And it was a discussion that I had with my wife for more than a year. Because I haven't done it for so long. And I didn't know if I would be able to face all the rejections that, you know, an actor faces. You know, when you go on audition, you're not going to get everything. And when you're in your late teens or early 20s, you can do that. You know, you have like the full future ahead of you, and you're ambitious and all that. But for somebody who is in his late 40s and early 50s, that is something that's very different. And one day when I decided to do it again, I call up my friend who's an agent.
Yeah.
And we had lunch and I said, hey, you know, I want to act again. Do you want to be my agent? And he said, yes, thank God. And I was expecting not to hear from him for a long time.
Uh-huh.
But instead, 2 weeks later, literally 2 weeks later, I got a call about this movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it was just incredible.
And to be.
Yeah.
Sweeter now?
Oh my
God. Having been through what you went through, isn't it sweeter now?
Absolutely.
To have this kind of wonderful, wonderful success. I mean, it's incredible. What it feels like.
Yeah. You know, this was what I always wanted. I didn't think I would get this second chance this late in my life.
Right.
Every time I talk about this, I get really emotional because, you know, I didn't expect this. That's why I'm so grateful to the Daniels for first writing this brilliant screenplay.
Yep.
And it could feature anybody, any color family. But instead, they chose to write it about a Chinese American family.
Yeah.
And had they not done so, I wouldn't be here. For me, it was every day was really memorable because
so much was packed into every day.
Yeah. Well, you know, we shot the movie.
It looks like a giant budget movie, but it's really not.
It was a small budget.
Yeah.
It was not a small budget.
You know,
we were just a craft service on a Marvel movie.
We shot the movie in 38 days over 8 week period.
Crazy.
But you know, even though we had a lot to shoot, every single day, the Daniels would gather the cast and crew together and we would do warm-ups, we would dance to music, that's how we start the day.
You became a family.
Yeah, we became a family. And then after we get together, then we all go and work really hard. And, you know, every single day we shot a lot of takes. I mean, a lot of shots. And
a lot of costume changes.
A lot of costume changes. A lot of hair changes.
Right.
For Stephanie and for Michelle.
Right.
It was so much fun.
I think the most important thing, what this whole production was, everybody was seen. There was no one left, even though you would be working in the props in the back room or somewhere else. And like you say, we gather in the morning and everybody knew each and everyone so that we all were in this together. We literally would hold hands and say we are all diving into the everything bagel at the same time. Because, you know, there's so many things going on. And being an independent film, you know, you have so much to get through because you don't have the budget for extra time and you have to get it right. I mean, he had shot his fanny pack in a day, right? I mean, if you were in a big production, you would have a week to do that.
3 weeks fight sequence, right?
Right. Yeah. Our whole fight sequence, you know, with the butt plug and, you know, running down with Jenny Slate with the dog and all those kind of things.
I'm just imagining like somebody listening to this who hasn't seen the movie yet. Excuse me. Oh, what?
Yeah.
The what? The butt what?
Yeah. I was okay with fanny pack. Yes. You might lose me with that.
We're moving into adult grounds now. That was just a fanny.
I remember the butt plug scene in Citizen Kane. Yes. Is it true that your mom, your original sort of break, your first big role, was it partly because she told you to get very, very dressed up? Was that, did that
No,
help
that
you?
was the, after the open call in Chinatown, Los Angeles, which my brother went to audition and I tagged along.
For Indiana Jones.
For Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I was giving notes to my brother and the casting director said, do you want to give it a try? And I said, yeah, sure, why not? And I did. The very next day, we got a call from Steven Spielberg's office and my mom thought, you know, this is Hollywood, a famous director.
Yeah.
So she thought it was a really fancy meeting. So she put me in this three-piece suit with a little gold chain hanging out of the side pocket.
Perfect for the character.
Yeah. And I was so, I mean, and I had a tie and everything and I was so uncomfortable.
That's adorable.
And I was at Steven's office and he came out and he saw how uncomfortable I looked. And it was absurd. I was in a suit, you know, a three-piece suit. And he says, Key, I want you to come back the next day, but wear something comfortable.
Oh. Yes, and because then, you're going to be eating monkey brains and I don't want you to ruin that suit.
Don't spill on your tie.
That's right.
And it was incredible. And I went back the next day and walked in the room and there were Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, and what? Harrison Ford.
What?
And we spent an entire afternoon together. And 3 weeks later, I was on a flight to Sri Lanka. And it was the best adventure of my life.
And so, is it true that Harrison Ford taught you how to swim? Which is the coolest thing if I had, you know, gotten that opportunity.
Yeah, because we, you know, we all stayed in the same hotel in Sri Lanka. And every day after we wrapped, we would hang out by the pool. And I would always watch Harrison, you know, swimming. And I was so nervous to get in the water. And he says, Key, come in the pool. Have fun with, you know.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't know how to swim. And he says, what? Come over here. Let me show you. Let me teach you. And so to this day, I know how to swim. It's because of Harrison Ford.
Yeah. So that day that you met them for the first time, George Lucas, Harrison Ford, do you know who they are?
No, I wasn't. I just immigrated to America just a few years ago.
Right.
So I was busy. My entire family was busy learning English.
When you were 12.
Yeah. I got it when I was 8.
Uh-huh.
And you were just busy.
But you haven't seen Star Wars.
You haven't seen Star Wars. Uh-huh. Haven't seen E.T. or Jaws. And certainly never seen Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
So I didn't know who they were. And it was not until after the movie. They screened it to me. And
you,
I was
like, you get
away.
The movie and you're about to go and you still didn't
I still didn't see it. I still didn't see it.
After you filmed.
Until after. In fact, during the entire filming of Indiana Jones, I was never allowed to watch playback. Steven didn't want me to see anything. And the very first time I saw myself up on the screen was at the premiere.
Holy cow.
At Man Chinese Theater. And that was when I fell in love with acting. That was when I fell in love with this wonderful and magical world of movie making. It's pretty incredible. Back then, Spielberg and Lucas was the first one to put an Asian kid in a big Hollywood movie, a huge role.
Right.
No one has ever done it before. And that movie changed my life.
Yeah.
It changed my entire family's life. When we first immigrated here, you know, we didn't have anything.
Yeah.
We were so poor. We flee Vietnam when I was a kid. So I was a refugee. And in fact, we escaped to Hong Kong And we were in refugee camps for over a year. My entire family was separated. And then we reunited safely, thank God, and all of us in Los Angeles. And as destiny would have it, 4 years later, this part, Short Round, came along. It's incredible. Yeah.
My family has a similar story, very different circumstances, but I identify and I get it. But Michelle, were you the first person to connect ballet with martial arts, to make that connection that they're so similar?
I think probably at that time I had that opportunity.
You felt it,
to do
you
that.
Saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, for anyone who sees Crouching Tiger, they see it.
Yeah, no, that's poetry in motion,
it
isn't
is poetry.
It? Yeah. I think what I did bring, because martial arts, when the guys do it, is very tough, it's very brutal, it's hard.
Right.
But the only thing that when we were doing it for me, because of my dance background, my ballet, it always looked more graceful rather than so intense. But the point was, if I fought, it had to look, you couldn't tell the difference whether it was a guy or a woman. It's the drama or the reason for why she's doing that.
Right.
It's whether she's defending herself or she's, you know, defending someone that she loved, or if there was a very specific reason. I think the most important thing at that point was to say, when she walks out, you don't want to see this like, I am going to beat you up. I want you to maintain the feminine side of the character.
But it's also better dramatically because you don't expect
it. Yeah, it's more unexpected. And in fact, that was what we chose to go with. To surprise the audience. So when we did break out into the fight, the audience went, oh my God, what happened here? Yeah, that was exactly what happened.
Two stupid questions now.
No, it's not stupid.
No, here I come.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, one will be stupid.
I promise.
And the other one will be really stupid.
Okay.
You ever get hurt doing this?
Unfortunately, yes.
I don't see how you can do this not getting hurt. Did you get hurt, Key?
For the fanny pack fight?
Yeah.
No, we
but
were very
lucky.
But
the fanny pack is the traction.
No, the people around him got hurt.
Yeah. But you were a fight coordinator.
Yeah, I worked. In fact, the Michelle's first movie was directed by Corey Yuen,
right,
who I worked with for a number of years after I graduated from film school. When you do a big action movie like, you know, Crouching Tiger or Yes, Madam, or you know, all the Jackie Chan movies, you're bound to get hurt because it's tough. It's very it's very physical. And when you're fighting with the other person, in order to look really good up on the screen, I mean, they really went at it.
You have to do
it. You have to really.
But listen, even dancers get hurt.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they're not fighting. Yeah. But it's so physical and so tough. People have no idea how much work there is in dancing.
We didn't also have a lot of help. Like there was no CG that, you know, the wires that we used were literally skinny like a matchstick.
Yeah.
Like now we use cables like this if we were to haul someone up and down because you could remove the wires. Because we didn't have the budget for that.
Yeah.
So every time you see someone fly around, literally it's very, very risky because it was so thin that at just a sudden move, the thing will break and the person will go.
Did you fall making these
I was
movies?
Very lucky, maybe because I was light, so I didn't have a chance to fall so much.
But Sammo Hung.
Oh, he was good. I mean, he didn't fall as bad. Jet Li had a couple of times. He broke his leg. Jackie,
he's not that big either.
Jackie, of course. But they take a lot of risk. That was the problem.
Jackie's
with
crazy.
It's not him, but it's also in the heydays of Hong Kong filmmaking.
Yeah.
It was like, how do you up it? It was all for the audience because it had to look dangerous. And the only way to make it look dangerous was because it was dangerous, you know?
He broke every bone in his body, didn't he?
He broke a lot of bones because there were a lot of risks that was taken, unfortunately. Yeah. And not just him. Behind the scenes, the stunt boys or the stunt women, especially the stunt boys, there was a lot of broken bodies, like, you know, that was behind us. And that was a shame. And I even when I was doing it, I always felt that that's wrong. We shouldn't do that. You know, that's not the point of filmmaking. Because at the end of the day, it is about telling a story. It's not about having someone put their limbs and things at risk. But at that point, it was so competitive. And it was for a job that they didn't want to be left out. So they would take the risk and try and pull the stunt.
Let's say I'm walking down the street. I may never have this opportunity again to have
you're already laughing.
Two brilliant martial artists. I'm walking down the street. I'm me. Mm-hmm. Is there one move that you could tell me is the best for getting out of someone attacking you?
Run fast.
Very logical.
Run very fast.
Once I saw a guy, he was an expert in crime and everything, and it said, if you get mugged, you take out your money clip with just the money in it, and you show it to them, and then you throw it, and you run the other way, because they will always go for the money.
Mm. That's what they want, right? If it was,
you've heard that too?
No, I haven't heard it, but it sounds logical.
I'm glad I could give you this tip, Michelle Yeoh, save you.
And
yes,
pull
yes.
it out and keep running.
Yes, but something tells me you wouldn't do that. You would know a move to disarm
a
person.
Here's the thing: I studied Taekwondo for many years, and my teacher is an 8th degree black belt.
Okay.
Amazing martial artist. I mean, I think he can beat up 10 guys. And one day I asked him, I said, if somebody, you know, points a gun at you,
yes,
what do you do? Uh-huh. Like, how do you get out of that situation?
Because we've seen it in the movies. Yes.
So kind of very similar to your question. And he says this, he says, if somebody points a gun at you, right, all you have to do is just put both of your hands up and surrender. You know, but how can you? But here's another thing too. What's so great about our movie is the message. It's about love. It's about empathy. Yes. And it's about, you know, treating each and everyone with love and kindness and respect.
Just if a guy points a gun at you, you go like, I love you.
Exactly. I love you. I love you.
By the way, it couldn't
kill,
hurt.
Kill him with kindness.
Hurt.
Exactly.
You know, if you're in trouble anyway, that couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
I listened to a bunch of film shows, and I've never heard so many film critics say, I don't know how they did this.
Right.
You know, people whose lives are spent figuring out how you did this, they just the complexity of everything you did and how perfectly you did it. I would give you all the Oscar nominations, each of you.
I was just about to say, I'm nominating them. I'm nominating you, Key, and you, Michelle.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, for Oscars and the Daniels and Jamie Lee and Stephanie. All for Oscars. And all I need now is to be in the Academy.
All right, I'm nominating you to be a voting member, okay? Yeah. I'm going to put your name up there. Quick. Right when I go back, I'm putting your name
Somebody
in.
Feed Phil a ballot.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You're so funny.
That's so sweet.
You guys are my favorite. I just, lots more to come. Lots more bagels.
Lots more
food. Lots more movies.
Yes, yes,
We're coming every Sunday. Ding dong, ding dong. We're here.
Naked Lunch is a podcast by Phil Rosenthal and David Wild. Theme song and music by Brad Paisley. Produced by Will Sterling. Executive produced by Phil Rosenthal, David Wild, and Josephine Marcherana. Engineering support by Brendan Burns, and our consulting journalist is Pamela Chellin. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend. But if you can't take my word for it, take Phil's.
And don't forget to leave a good rating and review. We like 5 stars, you know.
Thanks for listening to Naked Lunch, a Lucky Bastards and Stitcher production.
Stitcher.